Okay, welcome back. It is time to do an update on Morgellons. As most of you know, we have pretty well pioneered covering the story and presenting this non-disease, this syndrome, this affliction, whatever it really is, to the world. And we've done so with some amazing people, not the least of which, of course, is our friend and colleague, Cliff Mickelson, who is back tonight to bring us up to speed on the latest of this truly sci-fi horror called Morgellons. And I don't want to use the word disease because I don't view it as a disease. It's an affliction, a syndrome. It is something in the body that shouldn't be there. And there are a lot of people now talking, a lot of talk about what it is and how to cure it and all the rest of it. But we'll get into that in a minute. Cliff, are you there?
Yes, Jeff. How are you today?
I'm fine, thank you. I'm glad to be here. Glad you're back here. And all things considered, glad we're still on the radio. So,
absolutely. It's a pleasure to be back on the show.
Thank you. So as the mainstream media, Cliff, has gone all but silent in the last, well, it's been quite a few months now. You don't hear it. Occasionally a story pops up, but as the media is so superficial, these kinds of things, unfortunately, are in for very short exposure. They just come and they go and replaced by the next flash in the pan, as it were. But it's not a flash in the pan to those who have it. And the evidence continues to mount that more and more people are dying from Morgellons syndrome. Is that a fair statement, Cliff?
Yes, it would be a fair statement. We don't have any hard statistics on that, but there's quite a bit of evidence that there's a substantial number of Morgellons-related deaths.
And these deaths are occurring, well, I guess we should back up and say, well, how many, let me pose the question, how many continents or where in the world is Morgellons being reported?
I've actually got files from every continent on the planet outside of Antarctica, and since there's only a few hundred people living down there permanently, that would probably explain why there's none there that we know of. But every continent on the planet has reported Morgellons in substantial numbers.
All right. And are these reports, again, you can't find these in the mainstream media, are these reports continuing to come in, or has there been an abatement of them, a diminution of them? What's the status?
They're coming in at approximately the same pace as always. What's happened, though, is it's a little bit more difficult to keep track of them because more and more cases occur in their home locale, organizations spring up in that particular area, and that tends to pull the focus away from the original organizations that were keeping track. So you get Morgellons Australia, Morgellons Canada, you get Morgellons organizations in Europe, huh. And so they have statistics, and you have to go out and fish for them.
Are these organizations doing anything different? Is there anything new since we last talked?
No, basically they're more or less what I would term as being support groups, and they serve a wonderful function, mm-hmm. a very valuable function for Morgellons sufferers, because as we both know, there's just all kinds of crosses that Morgellons sufferers have to bear when it comes to dealing with mainstream medicine.
Is there any international, a true international cohesion yet in the Morgellons community, or is it still pretty much individual and unique organizations to communities and regions within the continents who are afflicted?
Well, unfortunately, it's pretty fragmented, and I believe that part of that is because the reach of the CDC and the World Health Organization is, as for lack of a better word, to put it, global. And people here in North America, people in Australia, people in Europe, they tend to look to the CDC and those organizations for their guidance. And mm-hmm. so what happens is when that isn't forthcoming, as we all know, you don't get any progress. You don't get any sense of cohesion. And there isn't really an international solidarity among the Morgellons groups, and that is something that needs to be worked on.
Is there anything new in terms of foreign government involvement in at least acknowledging Morgellons? Is the government of Germany, Italy, South Korea, are any of these governments now making statements to support that this issue is real, or are they also pretty much under the sway and influence of not only the CDC but the World Health Organization, which to my knowledge hasn't made much of a statement at all about Morgellons.
No, Jeff, the silence is deafening, as they say, and continues to be deafening. There is absolutely nothing that has come out, to the best of my knowledge anyway, from the governments around the world, practically. Well, for the governments of North America, actually our own government, of course, its organs are completely silent on the subject or have been as criminally negligent as you can possibly get when it comes to dealing forthrightly with Morgellons. In the U.S. Senate, though, we have had some positive response. We've had several senators that have tried to put the heat on the CDC with mixed results.
So someone has actually tried to do something with this issue in terms of pushing the CDC off the dime. They're not even on the dime. They're on the closet on this. So somebody's trying.
In the swamp.
Who's trying to do something in the Senate? Who are our friends in the Senate?
Well, one name comes to mind right offhand, a woman that's been very forthcoming for the Morgellons community, and that's Dianne Feinstein of California.
Any idea what's prompting her to do that, by the way?
I believe she's got a pretty vocal constituency that has been raising Cain for some time, and she's probably got a stack of letters as tall as the Bank of America building down there in San Francisco. Of course, as we all know, San Francisco Bay Area is one of the cluster areas for Morgellons.
That also overlays the homosexual community there. Are we seeing some kind of a template that fits over both? Is there a transference of lifestyle here in terms of Morgellons syndrome? I mean, these people are disabled, certainly a lot of them with HIV. Is there a Morgellons factor now in the homosexual community?
Well, I believe it's widespread, and it's an equal opportunity employer. So it really doesn't really matter what social class or what preference class you may be in. It's going to strike each and every person equally.
Well, maybe it's because the homosexual community is so well organized. And they are.
They're very well organized, yes. And that's a good point. That's a very good point. And that may well be one of the reasons that Feinstein has sat up and taken notice, because they do have a good network. And when, as you know, Morgellons tends to strike people with compromised immune systems. So when HIV compromises your immune system, I'm sure there's quite a lot of
cases. This is interesting. We'll talk more with Cliff in just a minute. So again, immune system function plays a role, apparently, in whether or not people show Morgellons symptoms, and if so, to what degree. There's a lot to this issue, and I would urge all of you to go to Rents.com, look on the left-hand side of the homepage, and track down through our data. You will find the best of the best right there. And again, I would encourage all of you who may have a suspicion that you might be afflicted. I don't want to say infected, because I don't think it's an infectious organism as we commonly know them, to do some research, serious research, and don't take anybody's cures for gospel. Okay, back with Cliff Nicholson talking about Morgellons. One of the things that has always enraged me, and I think I can speak for you too, Cliff, are people who are peddling snake oil, fraudulent cures for this syndrome. It just boggles my mind when you have a truly horrific issue like this, that people come along and take advantage of desperate people. They always have and they always will, and that's what really gives the CDC a lot of its clout in terms of trying to enforce what they call the law to protect the public against unscrupulous alternative health merchants. The problem is one of greed, and it just doesn't seem to matter how sick and how scared and how frightened people are. There are folks out there who will take their money and laugh all the way to the bank. It happens all the time. Morgellons is no exception.
Yes, it does happen all the time. In fact, with Morgellons and with a lot of other diseases, there's even more to it than greed. There's a cruelty to it, because it is preying upon the weak and the desperate. And in the Morgellons community is victim to a huge number of charlatans that are out there, and they never seem to get tired of changing their stripe and coming back with another pitch to try and suck in the unwary. There are no cures for Morgellons, folks. Don't buy it. Save your money. We haven't found the cure for this yet.
There are some of the alleged cures out there which purport to produce a reduction of skin lesions. That in and of itself, and I think I can rest assured that most of you understand now that Morgellons is not a skin disease. It is not a skin syndrome. It is really not confined to the skin at all. It is a systemic problem. So if the skin lesions diminish, it doesn't mean anything except these skin lesions have diminished. And to take it beyond that and to talk about a cure, well, you know, enough said. I think you folks understand that. If something seems to be too good to be true, you can just about bet on it. In fact, it will be far too good to be true. And you're going to lose
your
money.
That's absolutely, absolutely true, Jeff. Absolutely true. And you hit touched on a very important point that I'd like to elucidate on a little bit, and that is that this particular affliction is much, much more than just a skin eruption. It affects the way you think. It affects the way you feel. It affects your entire outlook on the world. And many victims don't even realize they're infected. They don't have the skin lesions. And especially in the initial stages of this affection or this affliction, it will affect people in ways mentally they're not even aware of, and they have no sign of any kind of skin eruption.
And there's a tremendous amount of denial. Very few people will either recognize a change in mental prowess, mental activity, mental acuity, any of these things. And then if they do, they'll attribute to something else, or they will attribute it to nothing but an overactive imagination, or I'm just worried. It's really a tough one, and it affects everyone. It afflicts everyone differently. So there's no... You can't just open a book and pull out a template and put it on top of someone and say, okay, do they fit the parameters here? It doesn't work that way.
That's right.
How do you work
that way at all.
How do you... Okay, so in the early stages of the disorder, and I use the term disease advisedly and with tremendous quotations around it because I don't think it's a disease. In the early stages of the Morgellons affliction, the people have no idea that they're afflicted. They don't have the skin lesions. This is a systemic disorder that is transmitted person to person, sometimes from inanimate objects, sometimes, and from other techniques that we don't really understand. It doesn't spread like the flu, for example. Not everyone who has it is going to give it to everyone who comes near them, or even the majority of people necessarily. We don't know. There's virtually very little we do know about this, except for the research done by the private sector and certainly Oklahoma State University. But even that isn't much. And we can also, I guess, jump into the next area of discussion in a couple of minutes. And that, of course, is the so-called CDC study. But this is a very complicated syndrome. And for people to try to put a hard and fast, I mean, you get the flu, you get a fever, you know, you get it's in your head, it's in your sinuses, in your stuff, whatever. This is not the same kind of thing at all, Cliff. There's really no precedent for it.
There is no precedence for it. In fact, one of the unusual things about this is, as you mentioned, that it whatever the key is that vectors this thing from one person to another, it is so hidden and so arcane that we can't pin it down.
Mm-hmm.
People who are living together as couples, one person will have it for 10 years and the other person still doesn't show any sign of it. In other cases, a whole family comes down with it. It hopscotches around cities and around regions. I used the example in the past of a pane of shattered glass, like tempered glass. If you threw a rock at it, that's kind of how it spreads, just
sure.
All over spider webs.
Yeah. Right.
All over the place.
That's hard for people to deal with, too, because, again, it steps outside the boundaries of normal, infectious, and commonly virally or bacterially vectored diseases. This is a different kind of a thing. We just don't understand enough. Now, along comes the Centers for Death Control, excuse me, Centers for Disease Control, and those liars, and they fund this phony program to investigate Morgellons. Cliff, tell us a little bit more about that. And, again, you can see Cliff Mickelson's paper calling it a fraud, which is exactly what it is, up at rents.com. Tell us more about the so-called CDC research into Morgellons.
Well, the CDC, as of course, as many of the people listening probably are already aware, has been an impediment to progress in finding out the root cause of this disease. And for the longest time, they actually did everything in their power to suppress or deny its existence. And what happened was that eventually the Morgellons community became so numerous and so vocal that they were kicked dragging and screaming into the light of day, where they were forced by the amount of ruckus that was being raised to try and appear to be working towards a solution with the victims.
Sure.
Well,
sure.
What happened was, of course, what they did was they decided, since they still didn't really want to have anything to do with this particular issue, they decided to fund a study because Congress was putting the heat on them, but they did a bureaucratic roundabout where they killed the study by underfunding it. And so they allotted, I believe it was $300,000.
$350,000, $360,000, whatever. It was pocket change. It was the least expensive major, what they would call a disease study in history. And
it's
a joke. It should have been millions, and $300,000 won't buy you anything. But, you know, we all knew that.
$300,000. Yeah, you knew it. It wouldn't even pay the lead salary.
No, it's true. That's true. Cliff wrote about it. You can see it up there under Morgellons articles on the left side of my homepage. This story, unfortunately, is not getting any better. We have had... I guess now about a year, it's been a year since this study was officially funded and begun, and wasn't it 3 or 4 months ago, Cliff, that they, the CDC, forgive the use of the term, announced that the results were now being, they were in, and they were being collated, and the results would be formally released sometime early this year. Is that correct?
That's correct. Actually, they were supposed to be released in December.
Yeah.
Nothing was released. Mm-hmm. There's something curious going on, though, however, Jeff, and I think that there's somebody somewhere, somehow, there's being more pressure put on the CDC, and I'm not sure exactly what's going on, but they're doing some vaccines waffling somehow or another.
Uh-huh. So that explains the fact that we've got no results so far.
Right.
Something's going on.
Right. They're sitting on it right now, and I think what's happened is that they've come up... that they're having a hard time denying their own research, and they're trying to figure out what approach to take.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure it's causing them all kinds of problems, and as well it should, because it's a lie. And they're trying to find all the possible ways that they can use to justify and rationalize the obvious obfuscation cover-up that's coming. And it is coming, because you don't do a major disease study in 6-7 months. It doesn't happen. Whatever happened to double blind and all the other things, the scientific protocols that aren't being used. So, yes, we can look for, I think, a clear cover-up. But they're trying, apparently, from what Cliff is saying, to be very, very careful about how they're going through this now, because there is such pressure, and I think that makes perfect sense.
Yes, that's exactly right. And I believe that they've also got laboratory results, which have them rather in a bind. And so they're trying to figure the best way out of this predicament that they managed to get themselves in over the last few years, so they can come out and save face.
Over the last few years, we have just a minute to the break. For our listeners who are new to this, and many of them listening, may have never heard of Morgellons before. We run into this all the time. What are you talking about, Morgellons? Even with the amount of publicity that you and certainly this program has tried to present to the public via the website and the broadcast, I think the average American may have heard the term but couldn't tell you much about it, if anything. It's just that way.
Yes, it is. And unfortunately, that's not true to take up with the mainstream media. They have the power to live or let die.
Okay, Cliff Mickelson is with us tonight. We're talking about Morgellons. And what we're going to do here is take a break and then come back. And if any of you out there, and again, this program is heard in many different time zones, but if any of you out there have a question or might like to talk to Cliff about this, or know some people who have Morgellons, you're certainly welcome to call in after the news break here. I'll give you the phone number. It's 800-259-9231. 1-800-259-9231. 800-259-9231. Cliff Mickelson and I will be back in a few minutes. Your calls are welcome. And this issue is a bad one. It's not going away. It is basically going almost sub rosa again in terms of mainstream media. That's why we're doing this update tonight. All right, we'll be right back in just a few minutes. Okay, and welcome back. Cliff Mickelson is with us tonight as we do our umpteenth Morgellons update, trying to keep the word out there among those of you who really care, and that's all of you listening, or you wouldn't be listening. The mainstream media, of course, buries its head in the sand, continues to do what it's told, or it'll get its butt kicked, and that's the way it works. First, we've got a couple callers already. Karen in Montana is standing by first. Hello, Karen. Thank you. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jeff. Thank you.
You're welcome. What have you for us?
Well, I've been very interested in Morgellons for, well, since 99, I think I found out about the chemtrails in the spring of 99 and started rummaging around the Internet and found a Morgellons support group.
Uh-huh.
And I think the lady that started, I don't remember her name, I don't know if it's Jan Smith that I've heard on your program,
mm-hmm.
but I do energy healing, and I started doing some distance healing on her and another lady, and I was just wondering if Cliff knows very much about that, because I didn't get to work on her very long because I moved shortly after that, and but I remember that she had gotten a tremendous relief, at least in the symptoms. But do you know much about energy healing with this?
The only thing I can say before Cliff does is that I have certainly only good things to say about legitimate, distant healing and intervention. It can only help if it's done by the right people for the right reasons. Unfortunately, Morgellons is not a bacteria, not a virus. It's almost as if the healer needs to know at least intuitively what it is before being able to do anything with any specificity. In general terms, a healer can certainly aid in the mental and emotional well-being of someone who is ill, and to that extent it may diminish some of the symptoms. There's a lot of psychology in any kind of disability, syndrome, or illness. I'm not going to, for a moment, put down remote healing, because I know it works. However, in this case, I have run across a couple of examples of people who actually endeavored to look into it and said, this is not anything I've ever run into, it's nothing I can deal with, and I don't want to take the responsibility of trying to build false hopes in someone. There's some very honorable people out there. So I'm not saying you aren't honorable, Karen, but
yeah.
Do you know what you're dealing with when you're dealing with this?
Yeah, I call them nanocritters. I mean,
okay.
You don't
call them
body.
That, but what is it that you base that upon? Your research or just reading on the Internet?
Actual looking inside their bodies.
Okay. And what is it that you see there that gives you that kind of a, and I'll use the word, diagnosis?
Sentient beings, nanocritters, I call them.
Okay.
I mean, a viral is so malevolent, a bacteria is very friendly.
Uh-huh.
These little guys are just...
They're neither.
Yeah, they're
right.
Just
okay, now you're talking our language, because
yeah.
I think I can speak for Cliff, and he'll speak for himself in a moment. This is not something that I believe comes from agrobacteria,
no.
as some want to believe. There's a lot of desperation out there, and people want to believe. It's something that is unknown. There, again, is no precedent for it. And I think what you're saying makes sense. Now, that said, do you feel you have been successful in somehow interdicting nano, let's go with the word here just for a moment, nano machines or nano sentient
yeah.
objects? Are you able to interfere with them?
Okay, Jeff, that's why I'm calling with all my heart. When I worked on those two gals in 99, I was fairly new to healing, had only been doing it for a few years.
Uh-huh.
I've had a lot of experience and a lot of other things, especially Stephen Hira spoke with you about my son here. I'm the one that my son is recovering from Gulf War illness.
Oh, yes.
Well, I discovered that in his body. We have pulled him out of basically the gates of hell, if you've
mm-hmm.
ever had
mm-hmm.
a loved one or a child just almost dead from Gulf War illness, and he is just almost getting well now.
Well, this is wonderful news. What,
yeah,
you know,
and I recognize those things in him that were the actual infection of the actual depleted uranium, and then I found it later on the Internet, so that verified to me that I was truly seeing it. So what I'm saying is I've got a lot more experience now. I would really like to work with a person now because I haven't not met anybody in the last 10 years that has actually really got Morgellons disease, and I would not offer a false hope, but I would want to do what I could to help them. I've never charged a penny for what I do. It has nothing to do with that.
Well, you're a true healer. That's wonderful.
Yeah, it's my heart. It's in my heart.
Of course.
But I would really be interested in working with someone that would have an open mind and that would want to see what we could do. I'm very interested.
All right, well, I'm sure we can help you out with that. Cliff, lots been said here. You've been very kind to be quiet, so please go ahead.
Well, I would say, to address her last statement, that she may want to check on some of the boards that are out there. She may find some people that are willing to work with her on some of those boards. There's, and she can go through and find the people that she resonates with correctly in order to do that. There are, of course, as we know, tens and tens of thousands of sufferers out there, so that shouldn't be too much of a problem. I would recommend that she just go to the boards and maybe post and see what she can find, and she'll be able to sense if they're the people she wants to work with. As far as addressing her original question, I don't really have enough information on the research being done in that particular area as to whether or not long-distance remote healing has had any effect. We don't have any documentation on it. I know that it does work in a lot of issues in a lot of cases. In this particular case, there are no studies, so I can't really answer the question.
It's a difficult thing, and remote healing with bacteria or viral diseases is one thing, but this is an entirely different universe of problems, and I am interested to hear you say that you've taken a look in people who apparently have had this, and you have seen nano objects. Now, that's interesting. This is anecdotal, of course, to everyone listening, but it's a start for you, and you do, I think both Cliff and I are on record as suggesting that we do believe that this is not anything normal. Right, Cliff?
That's correct.
No, they're not. They're otherworldly. Well, they're manufactured.
Okay.
And I have the disadvantage of not being online myself.
Uh-huh.
And I purposefully stay away from that and television.
Oh, you want to have a life, do you? I see.
Well, yes, and I'd like my right brain to work really well so that I can do my healing work. And so there's a purpose for it.
Leave your phone number with the producer there, and we'll see what we can do to help you since you're not online.
Wonderful.
I'll see if I can put her in touch with some people, Jeff.
Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you, Karen.
Oh, you're welcome.
Okay. All right. Also in Montana, Steve has called in. Hi, Steve. It's your turn.
Jeff.
Yes, sir.
By golly, it's nice to talk to you.
You have a
great program. And I listen just about nightly, and there are lots of fans of your radio station here in the Flathead Valley in northwest corner of Montana.
Great to hear it, and please do call your station and tell them you appreciate the material and the program, because our stations are under attack by people who do not believe in freedom of speech.
The gentleman that runs our radio station, his name is John Stokes at KGEZ. And he was just talking this morning from 10 to 12, as he is on air, and he was just talking about you this morning and how he listens to your show as much as he can and how much he appreciates your show.
Oh, how nice.
So you are well-liked here in Montana.
Thank you, Steve. And John, if you're listening, thank you, sir, for having the courage to be a truly great American broadcaster and carry honest information and diversity to your listening audience, sir. Thank you.
Yeah, and we all appreciate it too, Jeff, for everything you're doing. I know you put in a lot of work at what you're doing.
Thank you.
Anyway, I have a family member. She lives in the southern states, and she has I would say not necessarily an open kind of sore area, but it is somewhat of a rash. above her elbow on an arm, and she's had it for quite a few years, and she has had it looked at by lots of specialists, and no one can figure out what it is, and she has to live with it. And I had mentioned to her just a short time ago, after actually listening to your show, Jeff, a show you had on Morgellons, I had mentioned that to her, and of course she hadn't heard of it either, I guess like a lot of people. And how can I find or some information, websites or whatever, that I can put her in contact to? And I guess I'll give that question to your guest.
Sure. Okay, hold on, and we'll come right back and answer that with Cliff Mickelson, Steve, in just a couple of minutes. Just for all of you listening, I do have a good deal of information at rents.com. That's on the left-hand side of the homepage. There are pictures, stories, articles, essays, even links to video showing some of the fibers moving. It's quite a story. Again, science fiction could be no more scary than Morgellons. All right, back in just a couple of minutes. Stand by. Okay, welcome back. Cliff Mickelson is here. We're doing our Morgellons update. All right, Cliff, what about that? Skin rashes, skin disorders that don't go away can be pretty scary to people. I think you can kind of give a little profile of what the average Morgellons area of affliction looks like and how it acts.
Yes, and what Steve is mentioning there is pretty alarming, because of course I can't actually see the patient in question, but it does have all the hallmarks of a Morgellons infection, especially the not healing part. These wounds will stay open, these sores, these little volcano pustules, they'll stay open for months on end sometimes, and then they'll close up and leave a depileated skin and open up in another place very close to the original eruption, and they just won't go away. One of the things that you can do is ask your family member to get a magnifying glass or a small microscope and check those lesions, check those sores, and see if they're seeing anything underneath the skin, underneath the broken skin, underneath the whole skin. She should, or he or she should see fibers and other kinds of odd forms that would be in there, as well as diseased, enlarged hairs that should be growing in and around the lesions. And those that give away from Morgellons.
Steve, if you go online and just have you and your family look for Morgellons pictures, you'll see a ton. And they generally are pretty explicit. There'll be lesions that don't heal. If this is just a discoloration or a rash-like thing that isn't weeping, that's dry, that hasn't broken open and leaked, so to speak, for a long time or been gummy, that would be cause for even greater concern. But if it's just a discolored area where there has been no eruption, then it doesn't sound like classic Morgellons. And if it's confined to just the one area for a number of years, that doesn't sound like classic Morgellons either, because it tends to move around to different areas. Well, I hope that's somewhat helpful, but go ahead.
Yeah, she's actually had it travel a little bit.
Okay.
And and there is times where it seems to be worse than others, and sometimes it does open. But I'll have her look with a magnifying glass if she can reach that area.
Right. And have someone help out that she trusts.
Absolutely.
You'll need a 10 yeah. to 20 power scope, and you will see in the lesions or in the skin of the area just below the surface, you'll see colored fibers, and you'll see pictures of these online. There are four or five primary colors that certainly the most easily observable are the darker ones. So,
okay.
But they're there, and you'll see them.
Okay, I appreciate your time and taking the call. And Cliff, I guess we all appreciate what you're doing too, is to pursue this, and it would sure be nice to at least get a finger on this.
Indeed.
Yes, it would, Steve. And thanks for calling in, and good luck up there in Montana. That Flathead Valley is a beautiful place.
It surely is. You betcha. You get up this way, you look us up, we'll go fishing.
You got it.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks. All right. True. And there are so many people. I know our last program we talked with a woman who is a healthcare professional, and she made some remarkable statements that are obviously quite accurate. You know, when you understand as much as Cliff Mickelson does, and I'll include myself in there in a marginal capacity. But this is something that must be brought to the surface. And I'm not speaking figuratively here. I mean it. We've got to pull this into the media and make the media pay attention, not just once in a while with a scare story. It's got to maintain itself. And I don't know how we're going to do that, Cliff, except through the efforts of you and things. Now, coming up soon is the second annual Morgellons Conference. I believe it's Austin, Texas. And so tell us about that.
Yes, and we're really excited about this, Jeff. This is an event that this will be, of course, as you mentioned, our second scientific mm-hmm. medical conference on Morgellons, and put together mainly by Cindy Casey, who is the head and the owner of the New Morgellons Order, the Charles Holman Foundation. And the theme for this is searching for the common thread. It's going to be held April 4th of this year in Austin, Texas, and it's open to the public. So anyone who wants to come is invited to come. There's a $25 registration fee. If you can't afford it, it'll be waived. We would like as many of the public to come as possible. There's going to be some great lecturers, some medical professionals and scientists, and the goal of the conference is to be informative and educational and to inspire the community. There'll be some great speakers. Rhonda Casey's going to be there, Jeff. David Gibbs, who is a Social Security specialist, will be discussing the disability claims aspect of people afflicted with Morgellons.
Very important. That's, yeah, right. Okay, good.
Absolutely. Elizabeth Rasmussen, PhD, who is a doctorate in clinical psychology, she'll be there. Her presentation is going to be called Debunking Delusions of Parasitosis, which, as we know, is a DX that a lot of Morgellons patients are filled with. Ginger Savely, who runs a practice in San Francisco and deals with hundreds of Morgellons patients, will be there. Ralph Stricker, who is a medical doctor, also out of San Francisco, will be giving a speech. His specialty is training in internal medicine, hematology, and immunology, so he'll bring some interesting things to the conference. There's also going to be a psychiatrist there this year, a woman that we actually met, that Cindy and I met in San Francisco at a Lyme convention, and she'll be there. She's a sufferer herself.
All right,
and of course,
excellent.
Randy Wymore.
Right, Randy
Wymore will be there as well.
Oklahoma State University, the essentially the lead scientist, at least of those we know about, Cliff, who are working on this. It's the guys in the hidden laboratories that are doing amazing research, who already know what this is really all about, that we don't know about, that really irk me to no end. And I think most of you realize the CDC knows a hell of a lot more than it will ever let on, at least at this point in the game. Okay, back in just a couple minutes with Cliff. If you'd like to call in, 800-259-9231. Morgellons is our topic. Okay, and we're back. Glad you're along. Cliff Mickelson is here. And Cliff has had Morgellons for almost 14 years, Cliff?
Yes, 14 years.
All right. In Missouri, Patrick has called in. Hi, Patrick. Welcome to the program. What's your question, please?
Well, I didn't have a question. I wanted to pass on some information.
Okay.
I've been in the greenhouse business for years and years, and one of my hobbies was, you know, orchids and collecting rare and unusual plants.
Mm-hmm.
Well, everyone thinks that all life on this earth is carbon-based. I've heard it mentioned on the Morgellons shows, but once upon a time in one of my horticultural periodicals,
mm-hmm.
They had an article about a plant that actually was silicon-based. Of course, you know, silicon is toward the center of the periodic table. It can have a variable valence as carbon can. So silicon and carbon are somewhat similar, but this plant was not carbon-based whatsoever. I just wondered if the government, knowing about this unusual plant, could have found some way to mess with it like they've done with everything else and made something, you know, like silicon that would grow in the body.
Cliff?
You'd have to look. I looked it up in Hortus III, And I don't remember the name of the plant anymore, but some horticulturist may know. Mm-hmm. But, of course, if a guy went to Hortus Third, it's, you know, about a four-inch thick book, but supposedly has every plant in the world in it.
Mm-hmm.
H-O-R-T-U-S.
Well, the bottom line is, and I'm no scientist, but silicon-based life certainly is viable. Many other baselines are viable as well. I don't see how we can rule anything out. But the universe is far stranger than we imagine. In fact, as somebody said once, it's far stranger than we can imagine. And to think that we're it is so unbelievably stupid and myopic, I can't even comment on it. But Cliff, anything to add to what Patrick has said here?
Well, no, but it's an interesting point that he brings up, because there have been a number of people involved in the Morgellons movement that have offered up the thesis that this may be a silicon-based life form. There is no proof, however, one way or the other, because the research just hasn't been done.
Right, right. So we don't know, Patrick, but I certainly can't rule anything out. And do some research online. Keep following the Morgellons data. But beware, because it's a sticky, gooey mess in places.
Yeah. I'll try to find the name of this plant and pass it on, because would be interesting. Because I did hear that those fibers seem to be silicon-based rather than carbon-based. And
well, if you find it,
I'll give you a call back.
Yeah, call the. In fact, you can possibly just call during the program and leave your number or whatever with the board operator, and we'll get back to you.
Okay, well, thank you, Jeff. Okay. I listen to your show, record about 3 hours of it almost every night.
Well,
Didn't really care for your first 2 hours a night, but, you know, I'm more into the technical scientific things, you know.
They were 90 minutes, and what that was about was a different way to try to approach debt. And I'm not sure, honestly, that I can tell you it works or doesn't work. I was along for the ride with you. So, but anyway, thank you, sir. Take care. All right, Cliff, we have 14 years in your case, and it's kind of been one of those things that when you start looking into the nomenclature and the history, you find out rather quickly that there are suggestions that this thing came around once before, like in the 1500s. I can't remember the exact time frame, but that's where the original name Morgellons came from. And it would suggest that if that's the case, that we have a rather lengthy lapse. Where did it go? Or did it go anywhere at all? Or did it come and did it run its course, and then did it mutate itself into harmlessness, completely benign nothings? Or, we could go on and on, or is it from out there, and did it kind of waft through space and make its way down here in the 1500s? And was it then the same thing? I mean, there's so many questions. We don't know.
Right.
We don't have pictures from the 1500s. We only have written descriptions. And, you know, there are other things out there that can mimic, to a certain degree, the kinds of physical manifestations that we see with Morgellons. So I don't have an answer for you.
Right, and I believe what you're referring to in the 15th, 16th century was a report by, I believe it was Sir Henry Brown or someone similar to that name.
Yes,
who had
it.
Traveled to France and had found...
was in France, right.
Yeah, found symptomology very, very similar to what the Morgellons patients report. But unfortunately, of course, the details and the research is so sketchy from that period of time that we can't really draw any strong conclusions. But
right.
That was the name that Mary Leto, who named this particular affliction, came up with the name, was from his description.
Mm-hmm. Okay. As far as the type of people involved as statistics in the Morgellons community, those who have the affliction, anything new in there? The age spread is still, I guess, is quite enormous when you think about it. They're young and old and a lot of middle-aged people. What about the demographics of Morgellons, Cliff? Anything new?
Well, it's pretty much held steady. It's still found in all age groups, all racial groups. Age groups seem to have no impact on... There's no particular age group is favored over another. There's little children with this. There's a lot of older people. It appears in a lot of people with compromised immune systems in some of its more virulent forms. But it just tends to be all across the board, Jeff. It's wide spectrum.
All right. Now, when you talk to people and they come to you and they say, all right, I've got this situation, what do you tell them about the mental and emotional problems that many Morgellons people have? And it has certainly destroyed families. It has destroyed relationships, marriages. We know this. But again, as I mentioned at the top of the program with you, we have a denial factor that's very difficult with people. And those around them, what do you do? What kind of counsel can you offer people like that? How do you effectively help someone in your family or in your community or in your life in general who has this problem?
And that's a tough call, because this particular affliction attacks people in a lot of different ways. And so the biggest problem is that the party who is the other party in the situation needs to be fully educated as to what this disease is all about, this affliction is all about,
right,
and so that they can be of some assistance to the person who is afflicted. A lot of times that person is in strong denial. They are depressed. That's a very common side effect, is depression. Of course, that's an insidious...
And then they immediately are put on SSRIs by doctors who don't know what the heck is going on, and that can make them more depressed.
Yeah, that's right. It just gets worse and worse.
It does. All right. We'll be right back in just a couple of minutes. Hang on. Okay, I'm back with Bridget Nicholson. What about issues of nutrition, Cliff, and this disorder, this affliction, this syndrome, this nightmare? Is there anything that, I mean, you've heard probably much more than I ever will, but I've heard a lot and seen a lot. I mean, salt baths, alfalfa baths, all of these things that are supposed to take care of it. And from what we can gather, honestly, these little machines, whether they're nano encoded to produce something that we can see later on with a 10 or 20 power scope, in fact, respond to any of this. It seems rather unlikely, because it's not predicated on any kind of biology that we readily understand. At least that's the best we've been able to come up with so far.
Right, and one of the things that I would say is that all of those protocols you mentioned, the salt baths, the alfalfa baths, all of those sort of things, they do provide some temporary relief. And when I say temporary, I'm talking about 30 minutes, maybe an hour. They're not going to be any kind of cure. They've never been proven to do cure at all. So, but they will give it some people some certain amount of relief for short periods of time. The best thing to do, Jeff, and you struck on it right off the bat, is nutrition. Take care of your body. Take care of yourself. Get that immune system boosted up. Eat the right foods. Get as much rest as you can. Those are about the only things that a Morgellons victim can really do to improve their chances to fight this thing to a standstill.
We have also issues of people dying. Have we any honest autopsy results that we can submit to Randy Wymore or any other willing scientist who can look at them to see and to certify, if in fact they are there, that the fibers are in the major organs or in the major fluids of the body, major muscle tissue? We still don't know, and this is going on 15 years, folks, and some of you may say, well, why can't an autopsy be done? Well, for some reason, autopsies called for by certain families aren't done, or the results aren't released, and there have been some strange things that we've heard about.
Absolutely strange things. In fact, Dr. Wymore himself has been victimized by several situations where he was promised a body that he was going to be able to get results from to do work on, and the next thing you know, it went to the crematorium, or was buried, or his access was denied. He ran into more than one roadblock trying to pursue that path.
Roadblocks. Interesting. Have we anything substantial from Randy and Oklahoma State University that we can point to in the last couple, 3 years? It seems that things have gone rather quiet. I'm not pointing a finger at him, of course, but from
well,
the efforts of...
Well, things have gotten quiet.
Yeah.
Yeah, things have gotten quiet. In fact, we're hoping that at the conference in April that Randy's going to do his presentation, that he'll have some more information for us. We're not really sure at this point what is going on out there at Oklahoma State, but they have been doing a good job of registering people, getting the information collated, and we're just hoping that they will show up at the conference with some more information that'll shed some light on this whole subject.
Anybody else getting into the field of research that you know about? I mean, Randy has really been it in terms of high-profile visibility. Anything much behind the scenes? There are a couple others have done some work, but again, we're not getting the kind of flow of information to the public that we really need, and that's why we're doing this program tonight, and that's why I've done all the rest of them.
We've had several different scientists come in on specialty JAGs, if you will. We had Dr. Sikatowski came in. He was pursuing the agrobacterium angle, but then when he reached a certain point, he came to the conclusion that agrobacterium was not a determining factor in this affliction, and then he just faded back out of the scene, which was unfortunate because he could have gone on to do so much more. Randy Wymore, Dr. Wymore, has been our best hope at this point in time as being someone who's been consistently committed. Unfortunately, he's been thwarted by the CDC more than once. He's had several other issues that have happened that have given him some grief in pursuit of further knowledge about this affliction. And so we're just hoping that when he gets to the conference in April that he'll have something for us.
All right. Now we get back to the issue I began talking about, and it really irks me, whether it's cancer, whether it's mental and emotional issues we live in an age of hustlers and con artists, and it is particularly galling, I'm going to be polite, to me to see people getting away with this. It really bothers me. Will the conference spend any significant time trying to point up some of the more obvious examples of people selling false hope to desperate human beings?
This is an issue that I want to see brought right to the front of the podium at the conference. I plan to discuss that possibility with Cindy Casey, who's in charge of setting the conference up. And I'll be doing my level best, Jeff, to make sure that that's an issue, because there are so many frauds and so many charlatans out there. And, you know, nano silver, nano what have you, all that other kind of nonsense. People selling broccoli sticks or what have you, just to people that are desperate and will pay big money for it.
And they
It's just we're gonna publicize this. We're gonna try and put a stop to it.
I honestly think that if the conference does nothing else, that really should be an absolute top agenda item. I mean, you've got to do something for the Morgellons community at large. And the biggest service that I can think of, beside identifying what the heck it is to expose frauds. People literally practicing medicine without a license, literally charging hundreds upon hundreds of dollars, if not thousands over time, to people, and there are a number of them doing it. And it's just wrong. It's as immoral as it gets.
There's a great number of them doing it, and your suggestion will be followed up on, Jeff. I'm going to pursue this to the best of my ability at the conference. And I know that Cindy Casey is on the same page with us here. It's been one of the burrs under her saddle for a long time. Mm-hmm. You've got the Nutrisilver fraud. You've got the nano thing that's just been total diversion. We're going to try and set people straight on this, and just let people know that there is no cure, folks. There are just certain things you can do to take care of your health and try and improve your situation in life, but don't part with that money, because those people are crooks.
Yeah, and well, they're worse in my book, but maybe I'm old-fashioned. I don't know. Now, there are people out there, and maybe some of you will see this, who have this issue. And some of them don't even know what it is, and that's the truth. They have lesions on their arms, lesions on their legs, and they won't uncover their arms. Even when it's hot, you'll see them with long sleeves on all the time. Long sleeve, long pants. Women will have long pants on. It's very sad. And I'm just wondering, what is the current wisdom about being around someone who has this? And we touched on it earlier, and I just want to make sure that people don't overly become paranoid about this. So say you know someone who has it. What do you tell them, Cliff?
Tell them basically to go on and live their lives, you know, to be prudent about their contacts, but to realize that this thing, we don't know what causes this thing to vector, and that there are cases of people living in a Morgellons environment with other people, and nothing ever is passed on. And
right.
Not to cut their lives off, because it's hard enough to deal with the depression that this thing causes and the other mental issues. You need that social interaction and that support group. So don't cut yourself off from the world, folks. You got grandkids, you know. Don't be afraid to go see them.
Very good. Okay, there was a story, of course, four or five years ago now, about the Oakland A's baseball pitcher.
Joey Koch.
Billy. I think it was Billy.
Billy, you're right.
Yeah. Best reliever in baseball. He got this syndrome, and it ruined his career. He was out, I think, within a year. In his case, it attacked his neurological system, and he couldn't play ball anymore like he wanted to. Unfortunately and tragically, as I remember the story, his wife became afflicted with it, and then his three children. I'm not sure what the order was on that, but the whole family got it. They have since, from my understanding, split up as a married couple. But
That's correct.
The vectoring was 100%. But as you say, in many other cases, and I know other people, there is no contact vectoring. I mean, it just doesn't happen. And they hug and they kiss and they whatever. It's just normal business. Life is as usual. So it's one of those things. It's not like the bubonic plague or tuberculosis. It's not that way. But that's not to say that, you know, common sense shouldn't play a key role in dealing with anything like that. We have far more dangerous things to face on the planet than Morgellons in terms of being paranoid about becoming infected. And no, we don't think it comes from chemtrails. At least I don't, and I think, Cliff, our position, yours, is probably close to mine on that.
Absolutely. It does not come from chemtrails, folks. Forget that one.
Right. See, there's a lot out there, and you see these websites up there. It's unfortunate, but anyway. All right, my friend, thank you very much for the time. Well, let's do another program just before the conference, if we can. Then we'll do one after the conference as well, and keep the information up to maximum output on it.
Wonderful, wonderful. Thanks again, Jeff.
Okay, Cliff. Good night.
Good night.
Cliff Mickelson, and there's your latest Morgellons update. A lot of useful information, I hope, and I thank the callers for calling in. And we're going to take 21 hours off from the microphone. We'll be at rents.com, of course, and right back with you tomorrow night. Excellent program tomorrow night, including Cliff High of halfpasthuman.com. Talk to you then.